Tisha B'Av is a challenge. We're mourning for the Beis HaMikdash. It's something like a Shmua Rechoka. What do we know? What have we experienced? Do we feel a loss? Korbanos? Korbanos mean nothing to almost all of us. Shriyas Hashchina, our words, the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the bayis. I think that the Churban of bayis is relevant to every one of us every day. If we'll realize what we have lost, what we suffer on a daily basis, that is a result of the Churban, we'll be able to appreciate in very personal terms. And maybe the sense of loss that we experience will be a schus, counting in favor of rebuilding it. I heard from the Belz Rebbe, he should be well, in 1977, that the Beis HaMikdash was a tzinor of Torah coming into the world. We know that when the Sanhedrin sat in Lishkas HaGozis was a chamber which sat on the perimeter of the Beis HaMikdash, half in and half out, with its own walls. When the Sanhedrin sat in Lishkas HaGozis, then Batei Din elsewhere could dan dini nefashos, capital cases. When it lost that position, we no longer were able to do that. As I'll put it, miyom shechor beis hamikdash v'galinu mi'atzeinu nitla etzah mimenu ve'inanu yodin ladun dini nefashos. If the link to Torah coming into the world isn't there b'shleimus, then taking responsibility to apply Dinei Torah to a Jew's life, where a Jew might die, is something we cannot do. And indeed, after every Shmona Esrei, we say, Yiratzon, Sheibona Beis HaMikdash B'mehar B'yameinu, V'sein Chalkeinu B'sar HaSecha. V'sham La'avodacha K'biro K'imei Olam K'chanim K'moni Yos. The whole paragraph is about rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. Because tefillah and korbanos go together with one another, as we'll talk about a little bit. What is Sein Chalkeinu B'sar HaSecha doing in that paragraph? What relevance does it have? The answer is that when we ask for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, one thing we're asking for is that the connection of Torah coming into the world should be b'shleimus. And when the Beis HaMikdash isn't there, then it is not b'shleimus. And that means when you're sitting and working on a tesis, and it's hard, and it doesn't come clear, and you read the Marsha, and you read the Maharam, and it still doesn't come clear. Part of the reason it doesn't come clear is because of the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. Because the Beis HaMikdash was a tzinor bringing Torah into the world, and our unclarities, our sfeikos, our kashis that we wrestle with and can't resolve, when we have that frustration, one piece of our mind ought to go out to the Beis HaMikdash and say, yes, I'm frustrated because I can't understand the Torah clearly, in part because we're missing the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was an amud of tefillah. We all know the pasuk from Yeshayah, V'ava yusim el har kodshi v'zicham simachtim v'beis tefilasi. Ola sechem v'zivrechem l'rot salam v'zbechi g'beis y'beis tefilot y'karei l'chol ha'amim. What do you do in the Beis HaMikdash? Olo sehem, v'levechem, l'ratzon ha'mizbechi, we offer kabanas. Yes. But in that pasuk, the Beis HaMikdash is twice called Beis Tfilosi. Somehow, the title of the house can be Beis Tfila, the house in which the kabanas take place. And if you will take out Malachim Aleph, Perek Ches, where Shlomo HaMelech gives his long dedication of the Beis HaMikdash, this is what you'll read. Ribono Shel Olam, I'm standing here in the Beis HaMikdash, hear my prayer. When a Jew is in trouble, and he will come to this house, and he will daven to you, hear him and answer him. And when a Jew will fail and come to this house to pray for forgiveness, hear his prayer and forgive him. And when Jews are in battle and they can't come to this house, and they will pray to you, Derech Ha'ir Hazos Abayas Hazeh, when they pray to you in the battlefield, they're thinking of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash, and they're recognizing, says Rashi there, that the tefillah goes to the Beis HaMikdash and from there to Shemayim. When they have this house in mind, when they daven to you, hear them and answer them. And when Jews are in Golas, and they need to be saved, and they daven to you, Derech Ha'aretz Hazos, V'ha'ir Hazos, V'ha'bayis Hazeh, to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, through the Beis HaMikdash, hear them and answer them. And that's it. That's the entire dedication of the Beis HaMikdash. The only activity associated with the Beis HaMikdash, in Shlomo HaMelech's words, is prayer. Chazal say that when the bayis was charev, nin alu sha'arei tefillah, the gates of prayer locked. Yes, we daven, and yes, the Kodesh Baruch Hu hears us, but there's a gate, or gates, which are miyuchad, special, direct access, and that got locked. And our tefillahs go indirectly, and don't have the power, and the significance that tefillahs used to have when there was a Beis HaMikdash. We understand now why, as Chazal put it in Brachos, tefillahs keneged korbanos tiknum, the tefillahs were instituted corresponding to the sacrifices, not in place of. That's a mistake in the Gemara and a mistake in history. The Anshei Kedeshes HaGedolah instituted our order of tefillah at the beginning of Bayis Sheni. Tefillah and 420 years of korbanos were simultaneous. If you are used to a phraseology, bimkom, that's in the Shulchan Aruch, not in the Gemara. And it's because when Chazal set it up, there was a single, joint, integrated institution. The national korban, or the national tefillah. And the idea was something like this. If I lived in those times, I pay my dues once a year. In Adar, I give my half shekel. And when the Kohanim offer the Korbanos on July 16th, I'm there, I pay my dues. Said Chazal, that's not enough. Not enough to pay your dues once a year. The Kohanim are carrying out Korbanos in the name of the whole Jewish people. The whole Jewish people has to consciously participate in that Korban by davening at the same time, the same number of tefillahs. Tefillah and korbanos are a single, coordinated institution. That's why in every tefillah we ask for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. Shabbos, Yom Tov, twice in Ritzei and in the Yiratzon. Because we know that our tefillah is truncated, it's crippled by the fact that it's not together with the korbanos and the Beis HaMikdash. And this has a very practical effect. We all struggle to have kavanah. And often it happens, after you finish davening, you think, was I really there? Did I pay attention? Or on Shabbos, you say, in benching, did I say Ritzei or didn't I say Ritzei? How could I be in doubt? If I had said Ritzei, then I would have had an elevated neshama. I would have felt the essence of Shabbos in benching for the meal. I'm in doubt whether I said it or not. Yalla v'yovo, and Rosh Chodesh. Did I say it or didn't I say it? When we're struggling with kavana, as we all do, there ought to be a flag in the brain, and that's because there's no Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was the key to connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through tefillah, and if we have trouble connecting, in part that's because of the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was a place where the Gashmi became Ruchni. You could elevate Gashmias into Ruchnias. Korbanos are of all categories. Inanimate, vegetative, animal, and could have been human also. And is in spiritual terms. read the Maharal on the Akedah. And the Beis HaMikdash involved multitude of aesthetic beauty, whether it was the metalwork or the woodwork or the parochas that had woven into it beautiful designs. And Yerushalayim is described as klilas yofi, the most consummate beauty. Beauty has a way of elevating the spirit. And beauty can be used for the ruchni. It can be used for other things as well. But it can be used for the ruchni, and Yerushalayim in the Beis HaMikdash was a capstone of beauty as an expression of ruchnis. Achila, achilas kochim, where the achila itself is a mitzvah, and it's directly participating in Kedusha, and not only for the Kohanim, but a Jew who brought a shlomim, ate his part of the shlomim Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, after having had the korban brought in the Beis HaMikdash. The Gashmi was able to become Ruchni. As we say in the Smiris and Shabbos, Asar Divei Yechdun Ruchim Menashni, a place where the Ruach and the Nefesh can rejoice. Ruach is the Ruchnis of a person. Nefesh is the part of the person that's attached to the body. And both can rejoice when you're in a place which is able to elevate the Gashmi into the Ruchni. Perhaps, I heard this from an anonymous source, perhaps that's part of the reason of why we don't eat basar, we don't drink wine during the 9 days. An oval is mutter in basar and yayin. There's no restriction on what you can eat and drink if a person's an avelis. So why are we not eating meat and drinking wine? So you know what the Gemara says. They wanted to not drink meat because it was used as carbon. They wanted to not drink wine because it was used for carbon. And they said, well, what about bread? Wheat was used for korban. I wanted to stop that. Till they got to water, which was used for nisach hamayim on sukkahs. Should we not drink water? That's impossible. So they relented. But what was the thought? The thought was not just symbolic. The thought was, we're put in the world to take the gashmi and elevate it to ruchni, to spiritualize the physical. The Beis HaMikdash was a key instrument, a key energy to be able to accomplish that. Without that instrument, without that energy, we're not able to accomplish it, so we should not be involved in the Gashmi, in the physical. Maybe that's part of what's expressed when we don't eat meat and don't drink wine during the 9 days. And this, the Gemara says also that tam aperos and tam other things is nitla. We don't have the same taste, same deliciousness in the fruits of the world. That means the Beis HaMikdash was a key to elevating the Gashmi, and we all struggle with this. We all struggle with making the Gashmi into Ruchni. We all struggle to control the desires, especially at a time where the Shefa of Gashmius and the temptation of Gashmius is so inherently overwhelming, overpowering. We struggle with this, and as we struggle, we should think, one of the reasons I'm struggling, one of the reasons it's so hard, one of the reasons I fail so often is because there is no Beis HaMikdash, which had the key of elevating the Gashmi into the Ruchni. It's also the union of Achdus, the unity of Klal Yisrael. The Beis HaMikdash was a key to Jewish unity. It's obvious that the Beis HaMikdash created unity between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. That's what the Kabbonis were supposed to do. But also within Klal Yisrael themselves. It's not an accident that Aaron HaKohen, the Kohen Gadol, was distinguished by Ohev Shalom for Rodev Shalom. The two roles are almost interdependent, bringing peace between the Kodesh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael and bringing peace within Klal Yisrael. Because the unity of Klal Yisrael is forged in only one way, and that's through a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the only thing that can hold Klal Yisrael together. We had 12 or 13 Shvatim, depending on how you count, for hundreds of years before we had a Melech. And Jewish temperament, which is supported by Torah, of independence, creative thinking, judgment, evaluation, is something which will naturally drive people apart if it has no check. The Beis HaMikdash was a key element in that check. When there's one Beis HaMikdash, then there are Karbonos Tzibur. The Karbonos Tzibur are an expression of Klal Yisrael. It's very interesting. The Parshios in the Torah that describe the Karbonos, the daily and the holiday Karbonos, mention only Yisrael. Am Yisrael. The Kohanim are never mentioned. They're never mentioned. The Chiyuvim of the Karbonos are the Chiyuvim of Klal Yisrael. The Kohanim get instructions how to carry it out, but the actual Chiyuvim, daily, Rosh Chodesh, the Yom Tovim, is addressed to Klal Yisrael. It's a way, a place in which Klal Yisrael functioned as a whole. And therefore the Beis HaMikdash was not owned by any tribe. It was a possession of Klal Yisrael. Think of Aliyah LeRegel. I once, a number of years ago, spoke in Chicago. I was waiting for the car to pick me up to go back to the suburbs. Standing on the street in downtown Chicago, a Jew walks up, a complete stranger, and he says to me, "Where do you think people spent Yom Kippur in the times of the Beis HaMikdash?" I don't know. Where did they spend Yom Kippur? He said, "On the road, because they were on their way up to Yerushalayim for Sukkot. And they slept in a barn with strangers." Strangers. With other Jews. And who was the Baal Ne'ilah? Someone there who knew how to daven. That's where they were in Yom Kippur. He said that to me and walked off. He introduced himself to me. Didn't ask who I was. He just said it and walked off and disappeared. But I thought about it. That's amazing. We sit in our shul. We have our place that we bought. And I have my key. I have my key. That's my place. And I know who the Shchazen is going to be. Because the Tzibur wants it to be Chazen. And it's comfortable. It's air conditioned. And they spent it on the road to Yerushalayim. And the Gemara says there were no signs how to get to Yerushalayim. There were signs to the Ari Miklat, because someone who kills B'shogeg might have to get there fast. But there are no signs to get there. So you should ask. Ask people. "I'm going to Yerushalayim. Yes, I'll help you. I'll tell you. You need anything?" A tremendous expression of Achdus of Klal Yisrael. And today we suffer from Machlokes. Suffer bitterly from Machlokes. We should think one of the reasons we're suffering from Machlokes is because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. So when we are bothered in learning, and when we have difficulty in Tefillah, and when we're struggling with the Gashmi, and we're suffering from Machlokes, we should reference that trial, that tribulation, we should reference it to the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. And when we say, "Yi Ratzon Sheyibana Beis HaMikdash B'mehera B'yameinu V'sein Cholken B'sor Sechem," we say that after every Tefillah, these thoughts should go through our minds. Ribono Shel Olam, it's not just a house in Jerusalem. My ruchniyistic life now and here is suffering because of it. And that's why I'm asking for it to be rebuilt. If we participate in the real churban, maybe that will help give us a schus to see the rebuilding. I also want to describe to you, this is a theme, I heard Rabbi Breitwitz speaking about it, the theme that all of us believe in and needs to be reinforced, that today is a day of hope. It's a day of hope. Chazal said that the Mashiach is born on Tisha B'Av. And there's a famous Chazal, Rashi, in Kiddushin. Mizmor Ayin Tes, in Tillim, Mizmor La'osof, Elokim, bo goyim b'nachlasecha. Ribono Shel Olam, the goyim have come into your inheritance, Eretz Yisrael. Timu as heichal kochecha, they have defiled the temple. Somu as Yerushalayim li'im, they turned Yerushalayim emptied. People went into the Golas. So, Chazal say, Mizmor La'osof, Mizmor means a song in which you rejoice. Is this a rejoicing sentiment that the goyim have come in and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and sent us into exile? Kina La'osof b'boyele, it should have written a lamentation of Osof. So Rashi, quoting the Medrash, Ma'u Mizmor v'alo kinuhu, El Shneimar, Kilo Hashem es chamoso, u'b'mek kilo v'yotzes eish b'tzion. How did the Kodesh Baruch Hu expend his anger in Eicha? He did so by setting fire to Tzion. Mizmor v'shirhu, sheshafach hamoso aleitzim ve'alavonim. It is a mizmor and a shir of rejoicing because the Kodesh Baruch Hu expended his anger on stone, on stick and stone. And God did not, Kodesh Baruch Hu did not destroy his children, the Jewish people. That means Tisha B'Av is a testimony to the Nitzchius of Klal Yisrael. The fact that we are mourning for the Beis HaMikdash means that we survived. And even though Midas Adin would have wanted more, Kodesh Baruch Hu said, Ad kan v'lo yoter. You'll have the Churban and you'll have Golas, but no more than that. Klal Yisrael must survive because the world can't exist without Klal Yisrael. Tisha B'Av is the pillar on which the Nitzchius of Klal Yisrael stands. And I think that this is the way to understand the minhag. Everyone participates in it. At the end of Eicha, Eicha ends, Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha v'Hashuva, Chadesh Yemeinu Kikerem, bring us back, renew, and we'll return, renew our days as of old. Ki im ma'os ma'astanu, for though you utterly despised us, katzafta aleinu ad ma'od, you showed great anger against us. That's the way Eicha ends. But we don't end it that way. We go back and recite the next to last pasuk, Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha v'Hashuva, Chadesh Yemeinu Kikerem. Why? So superficially you could say, I mean, I say superficially, I don't mean it's wrong, it's right. You could say, we don't want to end on something bad. So we repeat the next to last pasuk, which is something good. And I think the next to last pasuk is the pshat in the last pasuk. Yes, ma'os ma'astanu, you were, the true translation is disgusted, you were disgusted with us. We provoked you to the point where you spit us out. Katzafta aleinu ad ma'od, and you showed great anger against us. Why? This is rehabilitation. This is not a nituk. It's not being cut off. It's not an end of the relationship. It's an investment in our improvement and our return. You know that the chruvim, the angels on the kaporos, by nes, changed their orientation. Sometimes they faced each other, and sometimes they were back to back, depending upon the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt his relationship to Klal Yisrael, kevyachol. When the Babylonians went in to finally burn down the house, they saw the Chruvim embracing. Embracing. Why? Because true, the Beis HaMikdash was to be destroyed. And true, we're going into Golas. There's a farewell embrace. You give a farewell embrace to someone whom you love. You give a farewell embrace to someone whom you expect to see again. Au revoir. L'hitra'ot. That was the meaning of the embrace. It was not despair. It was signifying that I still care about you. I still want you. And that this very process, it is investment in your rehabilitation. Imo anochi v'tzora. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm with Klal Yisrael in pain. That with is in two senses. It means, number one, when they're in pain, I'm in pain. That's true. But that could be a great distance. No, he means that my Shechina is together with you where you are in pain, where you are in exile. Yes, the Shechina splits. The Shechina has different bechinos, different dimensions. And a bechina of Shechina, an element of Shechina is with us wherever we are. And especially when we're in pain. All of this tells us that we're talking about an investment in Klal Yisrael and the hope, the promise of a greater future, and the hope that we can do something to merit it. There's a famous story, which is either apocryphal or it's true, about Napoleon coming across a Jewish congregation on Tisha B'Av and seeing them sitting on the ground and wailing. And he said, what's wrong? What's the matter? What are you crying over? They said, our temple has been destroyed. And he said, tell me where it is, and I'll build it for you. I'll build it for you. He said, no, it happened 1,800 years ago. He said, if so, you are an eternal people. If you can be wailing and mourning for a loss 1,800 years ago, you are an eternal people. What poor Napoleon couldn't understand is that we're not only wailing the tragedy as if we've lost something forever, but we are also experiencing the hope, because we are promised that it will be restored. And I think that this could be a reason for the minhag that we are practicing right now, all of us in this room except for me, or one or two others. And that is, you're sitting on chairs. We know that the progress of the day of the Tisha B'Av on which the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the first bias, was that the Beis HaMikdash was set on fire at the end of the day. The very conclusion of the ninth of Av. Ad kedei kach, that one of the Tanoim, I think it's Rabbi Yehuda, says, if I had been there when they set up the commemoration of the Churban, I would have said, make it on the 10th. Because they set it alight at the end of the ninth, and it burned all through the night into the 10th. That's why we don't relax the restrictions of the nine days till tomorrow at noon. Okay, the Gemara says, Aschalta Penusa Adifa, we commemorate the beginning of the Peronius, the beginning of the tragedy, and the beginning of the tragedy is the loss of the Shechina, not the burning down of the house. You can't burn down a house in which a Kodesh Baruch Hu's Shechina is present. His Shechina left, and then the house was set alight. Setting alight the house was only a symptom of that loss of the Shechina. And the ninth is when the loss of the Shechina took place. Okay, but still, there's a crescendo leading to the igniting of the house, which then is the symbol of the loss of the Shechina. Why should we relax the restrictions of Tisha B'Av in the afternoon? Seems to me that it should have gotten more and more severe. We would sit on chairs until noon, and then at noon sit on the floor. And when the actual torch was put to the Beis HaMikdash, we'll be sitting on the floor. But no, you can't end Tisha B'Av with devastation. You have to end Tisha B'Av with hope. And therefore, Chazal set it up opposite. You sit on the floor until Chatzos, and Chatzos you get up and sit on chairs. You're already getting up. Because Tisha B'Av has to leave you with a sense of being able to get up. There's a famous Gemara, very famous at this time, the end of Makos, but there are certain elements there which I think deserve emphasis. Shuv Pa'am Achas, Rabbi Kiva and his three fellow Tanoim, are you all in Yerushalayim? They were coming up to Yerushalayim. Kibbutz Yigiyu Lahar HaTzofin, they came to Mount Scopus. Kor'u Bigdehem, they tore their clothes, all four of them. Kibbutz Yigiyu Lahar HaBayis, Ro Shuel, Sheyotz Mibbeis HaKodesh HaKodoshim. When they got to the Temple Mount, they saw fox that came out of the Holy of Holies. Hischilu Hein Bochim V'Rabbi Kiva Mesachik. They started to cry, and Rabbi Kiva started to laugh. Amru Lo, V'dei Ma'atoz Mesachik. Why are you laughing, they said to him. Amru Lahem. Why are you crying? Omrulo, Mokom, Shekosuv Bo, a place of which it is written, Vahazar Hakorev Yumas, someone unqualified, other than the Kohen Gadol, will come into the Kodesh HaKodashim, the Holy of Holies, will die. Ve'achshav Shualim Hilchuvo, and now foxes stroll there. Volo Nivke, we shouldn't cry. A place that's so holy that an improper person goes there, he'll die, should be a place for foxes to stroll, and we shouldn't cry. Omelahem lachachani mesachik, said Rabbi Akiva, that's why I'm laughing. I'm not laughing in spite of that. I'm laughing because of that. Dichsi voidoli edim ne'amonim esruya koin v'eszcharya ben brachiyahu. Okay, Tosfos says there is no such pasuk. It's a long thing that I'm not going to go into. There's a verse linking Uriah and Zechariah. V'chimayinian Uriah etzel Zechariah. What do they have to do with one another? Uriah v'miktas Rishon and Zechariah v'miktas Sheni. They're in two different historical periods. Ella, says Rabbi Akiva, Tola hakosuv nevuaso shel Zechariah b'nevuaso shel Uriah. The verse is making the prophecy of rebuilding and redemption of Zechariah dependent upon the prophecy of Uriah. One is hanging on the other. But Uriah, see, in the prophecy of destruction, it's written, Lachem biglachem tzion sadete haresh. Therefore, because of you, Zion will be plowed under. Biglachem, remember that word, because of you. In the promise of the redemption, it's written that old men and old women will sit in the streets of Yerushalayim. Until I saw the prophecy of Uriah come true, I was afraid that the prophecy of Zechariah would not come true. This is Rebbe Akiva. He's afraid that the words of a Navi aren't going to come true. What could that possibly mean? Now that the prophecy of Uriah has come true, we now know that the prophecy of Zechariah exists and is going to be fulfilled. How could Rabbi Akiva be afraid? There's a brisk avort on this, a very simple brisk avort I heard for the first time the day before yesterday. Rabbi Akiva says that the one prophecy is totally in the other. We have two rules. A prophecy for bad doesn't have to happen. It doesn't have to happen. Prophecy for bad is a warning. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu can take back the warning and say, no, I decided not to do it. A prophecy for good has to happen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is committed to it. So says the Rambam and the Parash Mishnayos, other places. But here, the prophecy for good is made conditional on the prophecy for bad. It's only a prophecy for repairing the bad. And the prophecy for bad doesn't have to happen. It doesn't have to happen. So, given the prophecies, it's possible that the future will lack both of them. But now that the prophecy for bad did happen, then the prophecy for good has to happen. That's one way to answer why Rabbi Akiva said what he said. Although he says, I was afraid. I was afraid is a little difficult to put into that pshat. The Marsha has a very powerful shot here. First of all, he asks what we asked, how could Rabbi Akiva be afraid? Everybody asks that. And also he points out, when they, his friends, expressed their pain and their crying, and they said, Shualim Hilchubo, there are foxes strolling there, that's a quotation from Eicha. Alzeh dover libeinu. This is what depresses our heart, that it's a place that's Shameim Shualim Hilchubo. They're quoting Eicha. How could Rabbi Akiva disagree with that? How could Rabbi Akiva use that as a reason to laugh? Says the Marsha, what was moving his friends was a picture of a place that has greatness. Greatness being used for the most, being treated in the most shiftless dick, the most trivial way. It's the gap between the holiness of the place where Azar came in would die and foxes strolling there. Rabbi Akiva said, you have entirely missed the point. The nevuah of Uriah was precisely that the place will be shafel. So shafel that no one will appreciate it. No one will have pleasure from it. No one will settle it. It will not be productive for anyone. It will be desolate. That's the promise of Uriah in the Churban. So you'll be able to see that it's hashgacha. It's not an accident. Not because the Romans have big armies, nor because our enemies today have a potential of atomic bombs. That's not the issue. The issue is that the Kodesh Baruch Hu at that time wanted it to be Chorev. And he said, I'm giving you a simon that no one will have satisfaction from it. What's your attitude? A place that was miuchet at the Kohen Gadol, it's being inhabited by foxes. And if the Romans had set up an office there to administer the empire, it wouldn't have been so bad. It wouldn't have been so bad. Okay. We aren't there, but at least it's used for something useful. No, that would have been a bigger tragedy. Because then the nevuah of Uriah would not have come true. Nevuah is telling us, Uriah's nevuah is telling us that Eretz Yisrael belongs to Klal Yisrael and no one else can have satisfaction here. No one else can have pleasure here. No one else can find comfort here. No one else can find usefulness from it here. And we know that for 2,000 years it was desolate. So, Rabbi Akiva said, That's not the tragedy. When it said Shulim Hilchu Bo Anecha and says Shomeim, it means without the Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence. Without his presence there. That's the tragedy. The Shulim Hilchu Bo is a symptom of the fact that the Kodesh Baruch Hu abandoned the house. And now that I see that the Nevuah of Uriah took place, that the Churban took this form, and it means Sion. Lachem biglalchem tzion sadete charesh. It has two meanings now. Because of your failures, it'll be plowed under. And because it's for you, it's miyuchad for you, it's waiting for you, it will be techaresh. The Marsha says techaresh means it's plowed. Only plowed. The word for that in Hebrew is near. It's a fallow field. A field that's plowed, unplanted, and unproductive. And it will remain that way. That's my sign to you that the Churban came from me. And that's my sign to you that the prophecy of Zechariah is also going to take place. Because it's one tahalich, it's one process. From the Churban of Uriah to the rebuilding of Zechariah. And this means that again, we have to look at the Churban as it took place and as it remained. That Churban is expressing the promise that Kodesh Baruch Hu is giving us. And this is the meaning, every year I mention this, the Pri Tzadik, Medayik, Gemara says, Kol Masabla Yerushalayim, Zocha Barov Binyana, anyone who participates in mourning for Yerushalayim, merits and sees its rebuilding. He merits and sees it. Remember what we quoted from the Gemara here. Rabbi Akiva, when he came to Harat Sofim, tore his clothes also. All four tore their clothes. Rabbi Akiva wasn't laughing in place of crying. He was laughing in addition to crying. You have to register the Churban in order to be able to see the Binyan. The Pitzadik is Medayik, it's present tense. If you're Mesabel, you're Zocha, and you see, not you will see. And if you think will see is in Kipshuto, then what about the thousands of years of Yidden who really were Mesabel and didn't see? So you'll say it's Tchias Amesim. You could say that. But it's present tense. That means if you participate in the Avelus of Yerushalayim appropriately now, you'll see the Binyan in the Churban. You'll be able to see the Binyan in the Churban, and as Rabbi Akiva did, as he laughed, none of us would have the temerity, the chutzpah, to laugh as if we had shared his vision. But it's possible, and there are tinges of it. There are tinges of it. And the key to it is that you see the past in the present. Rabbi Kiva's ability to laugh, seeing Zechariah's future nevuah of Geula in the present, was because he saw the past nevuah of Uriah coming true now in front of his eyes. You have to be able to see the past in the present in order to be able to experience the future in the present. He who is disconnected from the past has no share in the future. He who is disconnected from the past has no share in the future. The idea of seeing the future in the present. I'm giving this shir, Nishmas, my father, Moshe Avram ben Shmuel. This is Yahrzeit today. And he was Niftar on Shabbos Tisha B'Av. And as you all know, says in Shulchan Aruch, Shabbos Tisha B'Av, Shalashudas, Ma'ala al Shulchano, Kishlom HaMelech B'Sha'atu. Shalashudas, on Tisha B'Av, you eat like Solomon. Your table is full of the most delicious, tantalizing, satisfying foods and drinks. Why? Because when Shabbos comes out on Tisha B'Av, you have a physical expression of that future that we see in it. Tisha B'Av will be a Yom Tov. When do we have a chance to experience Tisha B'Av as a Yom Tov? When it comes out on Shabbos. Those who are attached to the past and feel that they live on the foundations of the past, those are the ones who can see the future. To end with just one little word of Musar. The people who represent the past for us are the Gdol Yisrael. We are distinguished by proclaiming that we live Al Pi Da'as Torah. It's a conscious principle, I think, in the minds of everyone here. But conscious principles are one thing, and practice is another. And we slip. We slip. There are times when we hear a statement of a Godel, and we say, boy, he's out of touch. He doesn't know what's going on. How could he say that? I know better than he. I'm on the ground. I know what's happening. And we have no hesitation. We often slip in judging the statements of the leaders of the generation, especially the older ones, who are the past. They are the fountains of the past on which we stand and on which we can take steps into the future. And if we reject that past, if we in any way reduce the wisdom of that past, we are digging our own graves. We all know there are groups which consciously cut themselves off from the past. They celebrate the new. The past is out of date. We rightly condemn them. But we have to be very careful not to fall into traps of that kind. Even the casual, seemingly casual remarks of great scholars require thought. I'll share one with you, and then I'm going to stop. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zechatzar of the Brocha, in his biography, when he was older, and he was weak, as Rebbetzin told him a number of occasions, he used to get up at 4:30 every morning to learn with no alarm clock, except for one morning when he prepared a shiur klali at 3:30, and he got up with no alarm clock. He just set himself to get up. And he kept this up into his 80s. And the Rebbetzin said to him, you're a man with a heart condition, you're weak, don't you think that you ought to restrict your schedule? And he said, I'll remain an Am Haaretz forever. That's Rav Moshe. He was one of the greatest scholars of the whole 20th century. What could he possibly have meant? So I know when I read his biography many years ago, I didn't know what to think. How do you take a remark like that? But now someone told me something that Rav Moshe wrote about a Gemara in Tanis. The Gemara says, I think it's in Tanis, where one Amora had a dream of Olam Haba, and he mentioned that to his friend in the morning. The friend said, well, what did you see? And he said, Olam Hafuch Reisi. I saw an upside down world. People who are above in this world are below there, and vice versa. And then his friend said, where are we? He said, we're on the top. So people usually take that. On this world, politicians are on top, and merchants are on top, and strong and handsome people are on top. In the next world, they're on the bottom. Here, the Talmid Chacham are on the bottom, and there they're on top. Says Rav Moshe, it's not conceivable that two Amoraim would have worries about that or sveikas about that and needed a dream to be told, yes, the Talmidei Chachamim are really the ones who are important in the world. That couldn't have been an issue for them to worry about. No, Rav Moshe says what they saw was simply the population of Talmidei Chachamim, the scholars. And the scholars who are on top here could be on bottom there, and the scholars who are on bottom here could be on top there. How could that be? Because what counts in the next world is not how much you know or how much you understand, but how hard you worked to get it. And if you're a genius, you have a facile mind, and you have a photographic memory, and you are a gigantic scholar here, there you'll be nothing. And if you have a mind that's hard, it's hard to grasp, it's difficult, and you work and sweat, and you have practical problems that rob you of your time. And at night, it's when your eyes are drooping, and you can hardly keep your head up awake, and you force yourself to sit and learn, there you'll be on top. Because it all depends upon effort. Then I thought back to the biography and thought, aha, that's what Rav Moshe meant. He didn't mean I'm an Am Haaretz in comparison to other people in the generation. That comparison is irrelevant. What do I care how much I know vis-a-vis somebody else? But do I know what I could have known vis-a-vis my own abilities? In that respect, I could remain an Am Haaretz. I thought to myself, there's a good lesson. If a Godel says something, don't ever treat it as trivial. Don't ever treat it as frivolous. These are great people, and they put their greatness into their words, and especially when they offer us a commentary on what's going on in the world, if they tell you something which doesn't seem to be true to you, think 1,000 times. And even after 1,000 times, don't say no. We have to build our future on the past. If we cut our traces with the past, we have no claim and no ability to build the future. Kadosh Baruch Hu should give us the ability to fulfill that Gemara. Chol Mesabel Al Yerushalayim Zocha V'Rova Binyana.